Welcome back to another episode of Sensate. I'm Haruna, and I'm with
Hamelaine.
And today,
hi, Haruna. Welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, always a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. Ditto. I feel the same way. Here in nice and overcast Miami, I think. It's a little chilly today by most people's standards.
Yeah. Yeah, we jumped in the water here on the 1st of January with this kind of weather.
Misty,
cold. Yes, very cold. And so we did this New Year's dive into the water. Great. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. I remember I've been to Amsterdam during the winter. That's a long time ago.
Yeah. But
it's always nice.
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
So what are we talking about today?
Today we will be talking about trauma, early childhood trauma, and the impact that it has on us as adults.
Yeah.
It's actually a question that came by a fan. We have fans. Can you believe we have fans?
Woo-hoo. Little cheer.
Ooh, somebody's listening.
Yeah, so, great.
Good.
Yeah.
So he was asking me specifically, how does it impact any type of trauma, specifically early childhood trauma, and how does it impact us as adults? How does it influence our behaviors and different areas?
Yeah, I thought maybe it's good first to, you know, to define trauma. What is it?
Okay. Well, that's a broad question. I'm going to define it in the way that I understand it. Okay. Based on what we've learned through characterology, there are five characterologies, and each characterology has specific traumas that relate to it. Okay. So there's trauma that happened in the womb, when the mother is carrying the baby. Sometimes she's feeling terrified. It may be her first pregnancy. It may be a pregnancy that she wants to maintain because she may have had miscarriages or problems with previous pregnancies. So the mom has this fear, and that fear transfers to the child. And that creates a fear of being present in the world or being in the world at all, okay? Feelings of not being safe. And that first characterology we call the schizoid characterology. Okay. And you can see that characterology in adults by the shape of the body, the way the body looks. Most of those, most people who have a schizoid characterology are ungrounded. Anytime there's a conflict, they tend to go out of their bodies, leave their bodies, dissociate. They have cold hands, usually cold feet, very thin, most of the time very thin. And they leave through their eyes. They usually leave through their eyes. You can tell when a person is in a schizoid defense when you're communicating with them, because they look up a lot. They tend to look up a lot. They tend to be afraid of different situations, going into different or new situations. They like to be very comfortable with things they've done repeatedly. Okay, they're add on anything if I miss something.
No, just go on.
So that though the first characterology, the schizoid characterology, is what we call an underlay. The other underlay that we have is the oral underlay, the oral characterology. And the basic trauma there is the fear of abandonment. This is a child who felt that they weren't taken care of in the ways that they needed. So, for example, child is crying because the child is hungry or wet, and the mother doesn't come right away. Okay. And the child needs to take care of him or herself. And they feel that no one's going to be there for them. And they feel terrified, again, of making decisions because that decision may be the wrong decision. So a lot of times when these people are adults, they have difficulty making decisions, even as simple as asking for a meal. They go to a restaurant and they're like, I don't know what I'm going to have. What are you going to have? And you go back and forth. And what happens to the person on the receiving end of that? They get frustrated. Like they're feeling like their energy is drained. I don't know. And they get frustrated and say, just forget it. Let's leave. I'm familiar with that one because I was with somebody for years who had that characterology as their underling. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't take anymore. And they want to be, they're very needy a lot of times. They want to be next to you. They want to hold on to you. So they don't feel safe. Their eyes are usually the type of eyes that draw you in. And what we say is they tend to suck your energy. And a lot of people have a difficult time being with a person who has that characterology because they feel like their energy is drained all the time. I tend to have a lot of compassion for a person who has that oral characterology because I know it's a deep wounding, it's a deep trauma of abandonment and not knowing how to be filled by the other or even to fill themselves. Then we have the masochist characterology. The masochist is a person or a person who has been invaded. Parents either force-fed them or taught them that they needed to force evacuate. So use the bathroom on command, even when they didn't need to. If a child doesn't go to the bathroom on time, they have to sit there until they're ready to go. The child is violated. Sometimes it's sexual, emotional, mental, physical violation, and they don't have any way to say no.
Yeah.
Their no and it wasn't respected.
Yeah, so it can also be overprotective. I mean, you know, you don't see it as a trauma maybe, but a mother who is always on your back trying to protect you without giving you any space to explore.
Right.
You won't see that maybe as traumatic while growing up or being an adult, but still you haven't had any space from your parents just to develop your own autonomy.
Correct. Yeah. Then there's the psychopath, and I don't want to get it confused with the mainstream psychology definition of psychopath. Okay. This is a person who was betrayed, and it's usually the betrayal of the parent of the opposite gender. So for men, it's usually the mom who has betrayed them in some way. Okay, for women, or people who identify as women, it's the dad who's betrayed them in some way. And this deep betrayal lasts for a long, long time. They get into relationships where people are going to betray them in some way. So this one I identify with. We'll talk about that in a minute, but go on to the next one. So the rigid characterology. The rigid is a perfectionist for the most part. They have a distorted sense of self. They don't understand who they are. They are afraid to make any type of mistakes. If they make a mistake, and it's the end of the world. The entire world is over. Okay. You see them, they look like they have it all together. Their bodies are well proportioned most of the time. And they're usually the straight A students, the overachievers. The problem with that is if there's anything less than perfection, it's tragic. And their essence wasn't allowed to be expressed. No one recognized their essence. And a lot of times, and this happened to me, so this overlaps with the masochist and the rigid a little bit, where the parent steals your shine or your thunder and claims it as their own. So then the child doesn't know who they are. They do everything in order to please that parent, okay, or the authority, the outside authority. So do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, what I want to add is that these are just also models. So you have to really, you know, study yourself and your own behavior or feelings or energy field to know in what kind of characterology you fit. And this trauma is not something that, you know, happened in one big impactful event. It's something that you developed over years. But because you grew up in it, you don't know that it is trauma, or you became something else than yourself. So you really have to go a bit deeper to recognize the parts of you that, you know, became maybe inauthentic and not in line with your soul or your heart.
I like that. What I like to say about these characterologies is that these are the ways that we learn to survive.
Yeah.
This isn't, I don't like to say that this is such a negative thing. Mm-hmm. No, as children, we learn to overcome these specific actions or these behaviors or things that have happened to us by creating a defense, a strategy to overcome, to survive, to live. And as adults, we want to overcome that. We don't need that anymore. But it takes awareness. It takes a lot of awareness, tracking, training, wisdom, support, therapy, through therapy or in other means, by other means, to overcome these traumas so that we can live authentically. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And most people, I mean, when we grow up, we are the people that we know we are. And we, at least in my environment, I see a lot of people that would say, I didn't suffer from any trauma. I had a happy childhood. But I know from my own background, you know, I had maybe normal childhood with not too much violence, not too much, you know, parents who were taking good care of me. And still, I missed a lot and I wasn't seen. And, you know, there are so many things that are so, that go so deep without you realizing it. So when you think you don't have any, you know, like these strategies or defense mechanisms, then you have to go deeper, because we all do.
Absolutely. So I want to own something. I hesitate a little bit because it actually brings up a lot of stuff for me, a lot of old stuff that I've worked through. As I explain it to people I don't know who may be listening, it's like, oh my God, I'm sharing deep woundings or deeper things with people. You know, so I'll set my intention to be as present as possible and to share as much as I feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah. So this is really vulnerable. So it's also good to know for listeners that it is really vulnerable to always share yourself and to let yourself be seen or heard, and never know how people will react and what they will think of you then. So I do recognize that. Yeah. But since I am a writer and I write only about myself, I think I'm like an exhibitionist or something like that. I just share. And I, as long as I don't see people, I'm fine.
Oh, you chicken.
Yeah, I'm really afraid of being in front of a group of people and then sharing, that's much more scary to me. But, you know, when they are reading my books or listening to me, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting you said that you have a fear of saying things in front of people. We could look back and say, oh, that's a trauma.
Yeah.
There's a
wound. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I get this huge fear. Yeah. So it really, it's in my body. I really don't know, you know, it can be from past lives even, or the womb, like you said, it can be so old that you cannot really track it back. And that makes it so weird sometimes to dive in these kind of things, to come up with more information about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the earliest trauma that I experienced was birth trauma.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Okay. I mean, womb trauma. Yeah. So you go first. I'll share my story then.
Okay. So I think I shared this in a previous episode. I was born in Guinea, West Africa. My mom's American. My father's Guinean. My mom went to Guinea not knowing the language, not really being aware of the culture at all, to a place she just let go and surrendered, trusted that she would be okay. This is what my father wanted. He wanted to get away from the States because at the time there was a lot of racism in the States, and he didn't want to grow up. He didn't want us to grow up in that environment. So he and my mom went to Guinea, to Conakry, which is the capital of Guinea. My mom was in labor for a long time. And again, she couldn't communicate with the doctors or the nurses. They couldn't communicate with her. She didn't speak French. She didn't speak any of the common languages. And my father had to be the translator. And my father has a quick temper. Anyone who has been around him knows that he has a quick temper. If he doesn't understand something, his way of responding might be to get frustrated. Okay. So my mom was in labor, and I wasn't moving. Okay. So I don't know how long she was in labor for. It was a long time. And at some point, when I came out, I was rushed to an incubator. So what we understand about characterology is that that's a schizoid wounding, and also it could be an oral wounding as well. Taking a child away from the mom immediately and putting the child in an incubator has a profound effect on who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, and feeling safe in the world. So that was the first trauma that I experienced. Now, the second trauma that I experienced was at about 6 months old. My mother and I had to escape from Guinea because the president of Guinea had attempted to assassinate my father. And they were also, the Guinean government was claiming me as a citizen of Guinea, and the American government had claimed me as an American citizen. The country at the time was, I guess they would call it communist, but I think it was even deeper than communist. And my father, like I just described, has a temper. And he would speak out against the president. He knew the president very well. He actually worked in the government, and he would say things and it would get back to the president. So one of my father's best friends, who also had similar beliefs, was assassinated. And word got to my father that he was next. So they did everything they could to get me back to the States, get my mom back to the States. And my father escaped to another country, bordering country, where he stayed for about a year. So years later, I'm going through a therapy session, group therapy session. The therapist said, wow, that's post-traumatic stress syndrome. You have that in your system. Everything that's going on around you you didn't understand it. You as a child were taking in your environment, taking in all of the discussions, the anger. You just didn't know.
Yeah, you were only 6 months old.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's how it goes. You know, you really don't know what you absorb.
Yeah. Right. And if no one, if she hadn't said that to me, I probably wouldn't have identified it as post-traumatic stress at all. I would have just thought, yeah, you know, I don't feel comfortable being in crowds. Loud noises kind of jar me. And not really having an origin for any of these things. So yeah, that's how, that's how early the trauma or the wounding took place for me.
And when you speak about it, I can really feel it because I really tune in also into the energy field, and I can feel the cold coming up. So there's this frozenness in the body or in the energy field that surrounds it or goes through it, that's still there, that you can still feel being present. Yeah.
Right. And I can actually hear my throat shutting a little bit as I talk about it. So, throat chakra starting to clamp.
Yeah.
I'm not reliving it per se. I'm going through it because the body
remembers.
The body remembers everything.
Yeah, the cell has a memory. The cells have a memory. Yeah.
So as you know, one of the things that you can do to overcome this is by talking about it. You know, it has a deep, a less and less impact every time you speak about your trauma or a traumatic event. What's in the safe environment? Safety is the key. Okay. Good listening.
Yeah, deep listening on the other side helps. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, coming to the States, I don't remember obviously a lot of things that took place once I got to the States, but it was similar. I was sharing this with a friend the other day. It was similar to the Elian Gonzalez thing that happened a number of years ago, where this little boy and his mother escaped Cuba to come to the States, and the mom died on the way. And the little boy was rescued and taken to his relatives here in Miami. And the Cuban government was claiming him, and the American government. Oh, a dove just showed up on my balcony. Interesting sign.
Cool.
So there was a huge battle, government battle, and eventually Elian went back to Cuba. Okay. And I think he may be in his 20s at this point. But anyway, when I was thinking about it, so the American government was claiming me. I was recognized as a citizen right away, even though I was born overseas. So my father hid for a year and eventually came back to the States. Yeah. At that point, I was already walking and talking. Yeah. And here is this stranger. To me, he was a stranger coming into my life. You know, it was my mom and me and my grandmother. And that's where we went. We lived with my grandmother. And I had to reform this relationship with this person who is now with my mom. So we're going to fast forward that to the psychopath characterology. So I'm with my mom, and it's just really the two of us. And then this man comes in. I don't know him. My mom accepts him because obviously it's her husband. That child felt the betrayal. There you go. So that's the psychopath betrayal.
And I can really feel the sadness also. When you talk about this, it's different than before. Before it was the cold, and now it's the sadness that I feel.
Yeah. So even though it's my father, I don't know this person, and my mom is spending time with this human being who is loud, whatever other behaviors he had, I had to adopt, adjust to it. There was a part of me, obviously, that had a cellular memory of who he was, since, he is my father, and he was with me for the first 6 months of my life. But a year later, I'm 16 months old or so, and he comes in, or actually, I'm older than that, but anyway, he comes back, and that created that split inside of me of who I am to my mother and who this other person is. And on some level, there's a battle or conflict between my father and me. And then there's also somebody telling me what to do. Who is this person who now tells me what to do? So that's the psychopath characterology at work. Last thoughts?
No, I'm just feeling what happens. And so I was wondering how you, if you really fast forward it to where you are now, how, or maybe not now, but maybe a little bit earlier, how has it affected your life? Or where do you see these patterns being repeated? Because that's what happens with trauma. It's repeating itself in a way to be healed. It comes up in the same kind of situations, or maybe different, slightly different, but that's an attempt of your system to heal.
Absolutely. Those two events had, if I really had to evaluate it, were probably minor compared to other traumas that I experienced. I mean, physical, emotional, sexual abuse, and things like that had a deeper impact for me than those two, I guess. Obviously, the post-traumatic stress syndrome had a physical or bodily or kinesthetic impact on me, where feeling unsafe in large crowds, hypervigilance, always looking for where the trouble may be. But I expressed that I had been physically abused by my dad, and I watched him beat my mom, and that had deeper impact on me than anything that I previously mentioned. Since I was the oldest, I was usually the one who was responsible if my siblings did something wrong. And in our home, corporal punishment was the name of the game. So there was beatings with belts, with switches, limbs cut from a tree, things like that, that I experienced. And then there was also emotional abuse on my mom's side, from my mom to all of us, all of my siblings. And, hearing things from the people who you love the most or who's supposed to take care of you, or experiencing things, has a deep impact on how you're going to then have relationships later, how you'll navigate love or feel safe in different emotional relationships.
So the saying like words don't hurt, it's not true.
Absolutely not. Words are worse than, I would rather have a physical beating than the words. Even today, it's like I'd rather have a physical altercation with someone, get my ass kicked, deal with it. The wounds heal. With that, the words sting and they last for a long time. And then you're replaying those words like a record player or a recorder over and over and over again. And that becomes part of your super ego. It's like, you're not good enough. Why are you even doing anything? Who do you think you are? You're just a badass kid. That was my mom, one of my mom's favorites. You guys are just badass kids. It was so bad in my home at times that my parents were big time gamblers. They were addicted to gambling. That was basically their vice. If they didn't have luck when they went out, we were always blamed for it. Because we may have been sitting home doing something wrong, and that impacted them. So we would be in trouble for that. It's like, what the fuck do we do? So then we fast forward that to the rigidity. Let's go with the rigid characterology. Okay, so you have to be good. So literally throughout elementary school, high school, junior high, I would sit at my desk, and for people who are listening who know me from that time, with my hands on my desk, folded, my hands together, fingers together, I said nothing. People, a lot of people didn't even know I had a voice. I wasn't going to get into trouble at school because getting into trouble at school would lead to me getting punished at home. So, the perfectionist, have to be perfect, have to be the best. If you're not the best, then you'll be punished, you'll be beaten. I would be beaten. I'm just going to own that. I don't want to disown it. And so that had a profound effect on me in college and at Brennan, and in relationships. I would be in relationships where my girlfriends or partners would step all over me. Take advantage of situations. And if I spoke up, I said anything, then I was wrong somehow. So, yeah, those are a couple of examples, of how things happen.
So we
And I'm also very protective of people, so children and women, very protective. I will fight to the death to protect children or women.
So we what I hear you say is also that we internalize the voices of our parents. So we are repeating what is said to us. And then at a certain point, we don't even recognize the voices as outside voices, but they become our internal voice. So when it comes to, to your growth, then we really have to realize that our voice, the voice of our soul or our heart is encouraging and loving. That's a different voice. So that's the voice you can start to listen to. Not to the other one that is usually suppressive or, naming you things that you are not.
That's true. There's a part of me that's like, yeah, that's all true. And then there's, again, even with all of the work that I've done, there's still a part of me that's like, I know, but it's so hard. It's a challenge.
It's an ongoing challenge also. So sometimes your the periods in your life are, less challenging, and then other periods are more challenging, and then all the same stories and wounds and defenses come up. Just another chance to work through them.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity.
On a deeper level, not on the same level, on a deeper level.
One of the things I want to say, if we go back to characterology, is that we usually have all of the characterologies. So the main two are the schizoid and the aural, and then we have different combinations. So I have different combinations, and they shift and they change based on how what you're working on at the time. I want to make sure I'm that clear.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. For now. Yeah. You're starting to get nervous, aren't you?
No, I could talk more about different things. And I'd love to hear from you first.
Yeah, so if I look at myself like 20 years back, maybe when I haven't done any work yet, then I feel at the time I was quite successful and earning my money, doing the things that I loved. I was a journalist back then and I traveled the world. You know, that was a time of a lot of money in companies. So they invited journalists to go to places. And then I was, well, in the beginning of my 30s, and I was wondering whether I should not should have a child, but maybe if I wanted a child at all or not. So because I was 30 already, I thought, well, I better dive into it because, you know, before it's too late or something like that. Now I know it's never too late, almost, like, you know, you can become a mother at 40 even, but for the listeners that are a bit younger, don't worry. But at the time I thought I better dive into it now because, you know, I didn't want to bring a child into this world. Although I was taking good care of myself, doing the things I wanted, everything, and I still was very worried about bringing a child into this world, into this violent world. That's what I thought. So then I discovered Barbara Brennan, and I went there, and that was one of my questions. Do I really not want a child, or is there maybe something else that's keeping me from trying? So then over the years, and I was, you know, I was tough. I had this strong, rigid overlay. So, you know, I was perfect. Yes, I was perfect. I had it all together. You know, you're looking good, having a lot of friends, making money, doing the work I loved. Nothing wrong with me. And then every first week of a new year, it's about the schizoid wounding and this wounding of fear of existence, to not wanting to be here. And I noticed every first week I was completely out of my body, and that was so strange. You know, like the template, the energy template, just made this reaction, this defense stronger. So I totally disconnected from my body. And I felt autistic. So,
one second. So when you say every first week.
Every first week when we were discussing the schizoid wounding. So it was not until my fourth year, I guess, that I really started to own this schizoid wounding, because I thought, that's really strange that I'm totally out of my body every first week. That's when things started to realize that it had something to do with me. So then I started to dive into this early childhood wounding, and where I came was that my mother, when she was pregnant, she was 3 months pregnant with me, and she was quite young at the time. She was 22. She went to the doctor and he said, "You are not pregnant." And she said, "I'm sure I'm pregnant." And he said, "You're not pregnant." So, but she wasn't having her periods. So then he gave her a pill, so her periods would come back. Basically, that's an abortion pill, you know, just to abort the child and and bring the cycle back. So that was my first, that's like, you cannot really imagine what that does to a developing fetus. It's like a chemical attack on a just developing fetus. So I re-experienced that in a healing. And that's really strange, because then you feel how much it is a life and death situation, but you cannot really understand it unless you have really felt it in a way. So I guess that was the first really traumatic event, and what it did also, it had a deep impact on the cell growth, because in your third month also the bone structures are formed. So I have these deviations in my cell skeleton with a smaller ribs in my neck things are grown together, and you know, it has a really deep impact on your body, really on the cellular level. So then my mother gave birth to me and she lost a lot of blood. So she was in the hospital. She stayed in the hospital for 10 days, I guess. And I was in another space at night, at least. So during the nights, I was alone with other kids that were born. So there's the abandonment, you know, you have to be with your mother at that time to bond, to be together, to feel safe also, that your body comes to rest. So it can rest, really relax after going through. I mean, birth itself is for everybody is traumatic. But if your body after that can relax on top of your mother while you release all the tension, then it's okay. If that doesn't happen, it stays in the body. So I can feel during my life that I have a lot of tension in my body. It's really hard to really relax and open and be not hypervigilant and be at ease with myself. So I think that was my main thing growing up, that I never felt at ease with myself. And my mother also got hormones to make the birth happen. She didn't breastfeed me. You know, all these things we need as babies to be able to relax into our own bodies and feel safe. I think they didn't happen at all. So that's what I still feel in my body. It's still there. It's still very, well, now I am in a different phase of my life. I can really start to relax more. And I can really feel how things can be effortlessly done. But before, I'm always on. Like the light is on always, day and night. And that can be exhausting. But with the rigid type, you just go on. You are doing it anyway. But at a cost. Yeah. So I've had also a big fear of groups. So when in school, I was also, what happens in groups is when we go to group processes, then there's always someone who is representing a certain emotion, for example. So I was always the one representing the fear. It was totally there in my body. And I was frozen. I was frozen all the time. So that's why, one of the reasons why I stopped in my advanced studies in fifth year, because it was so painful to my body. because I was holding the fear and I didn't have a space in my body to, you know, just let the fear come through and let go. It stayed there because I resonate with fear. So that is also what trauma does. You resonate with certain energies. So I resonate a lot with fear and with loneliness also. So as soon as I step into a place where people feel lonely, for example, nightclubs, you can feel that sometimes, can be really empty and not connected, I start to resonate with it. So when I was younger, I thought, oh, there I go again. I'm not normal. I feel lonely. I feel so, but I'm sensitive. So I'm picking up on energies. They are also in me, inside of me. It is me. And also, but they are reinforced or made more present by the outside world. So, and then at the age of 5, my parents divorced, but my mother very suddenly left my father. So he didn't know. She took her 2 children. She went away to another city. He wasn't aware of this movement. We just went to live with her boyfriend at the time, with another man. And he wasn't informed, and neither were we, her children. So, you know, from one day on the other, you have a totally different house, father figure, school, everything. And I mean, still, as parents, it's possible that you need to divorce and you cannot stick together and it's better for you, but still you can explain a lot to your children. So I would say that to people listening also, that you really need to help your children go through the process and inform them about what's happening. So when I grew up in relationships, for example, I was waiting basically for the moment that I would be left alone and my boyfriend would leave. And that also becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, of course, because I was also acting like that, like saying those things, well, you will leave anyway, or something like that, you know. Yeah. Yeah, right. So you really have to reprogram yourself and start to believe other things. So, which I did also. But.
So you replaced those other things with
different. Yeah, but that also grows through experience, you know. I'm not the same person anymore. So my beliefs now stem from a different feeling inside of myself. Like I do believe in love, but I have a different view on love now. Like, of course, people can break up, but on a soul level, we have been learning together and spending time together and loving each other. And before, I was really like, you know, I would be really disappointed when I broke up with someone and then disregard our whole relationship. Like this 5 or 10 years that you were together, it's like totally a waste of my time. And that's not true, of course. Yeah. 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 So those are the main things that happened in early childhood. But then there's the part where, you know, I grew up in a fairly safe environment, but my mother, so it can have really different forms. Some forms are really noticeable. You know that they are traumatic, but other forms are more subtle, and they can also be very, they form you very deeply. So what my mother is a very sensitive sensitive person, so she cannot stand like loud noise or lights or a lot of movement, or so children running, children screaming, playing music, dancing in front of her. I mean, all these types of things that are really natural to children. She always said she would grab her ears like every, you're so loud, you're so loud. So if you hear that every day, then you start, obviously start to believe you are very loud and you are too much. And you start to hold yourself in, to hold the energy in, to make sure you're not that vibrant anymore, that you are, maybe that they don't even see you or can hear you. So, you know, my mother maybe didn't do anything wrong, but the message she gave me continuously, that was like really hard. So that's where my rigidity comes from. Not that she wanted me to be perfect or that I had to fit the norm or, you know, that I had to achieve, not at all. But she didn't want me to be as vibrant, present, outspoken, loud as I am. So I learned how to hold back or hold in. Yeah. So then you have to, you know, you have to really learn how to free your throat chakra also to be more authentic and to speak and to. Well, one of the things I always thought that I'm not really interesting. Yeah. Because that was the message I got. Yeah.
Who said that?
Well, the other thing with my mother is that I confronted her, I guess, a lot with herself. So I would always have another opinion than my mother. And of course, that's not really cool for a mother when you're the adult. But I was this child that notices a lot, is very sensitive, and is like seeing through things. Well, she didn't accept that. So when my kid would tell me something, when she says, you're very, I don't know, why are you so impatient? That's mostly my thing. I can be, when I'm tired, I'm very impatient. Why are you so impatient? Would my kid will ask that. And I would say, yeah, I'm impatient because I'm tired. It has nothing to do with you. But my mother would blame it on me because I am whatever I am. I am not. I am not nourishing to her senses in a way, or yeah, affecting her senses, and that's not fair because she is so sensitive. Yeah. So here again, she could have taken me through this process without blaming it on me. But as children, we get to blame. So. Yeah. So I try not to do that with my kid. Yeah. I really try to explain what happens inside of me so she can relate to that and understand why.
That's really good. That's the one benefit of going through all the stuff that we've gone through, is that we're more awake when we are relating with our to our children.
Yeah.
At least we
Yeah.
do our best to be.
No.
Doesn't always
No,
work out.
and I know every parent tries their best, you know. We have to do the raising of our children with the tools we have. But I think my mother could have also opened up to my. She really stepped on my soul sometimes, you know, by not hearing me or hearing my side of the story or my grief. Yeah, there is a harshness in the words, in the wording, and I agree with you how much that impacts you as a kid. Yeah.
That's really,
Yeah.
yeah, that's really deep. I could feel that, how that
Yeah.
has influenced you for sure.
Yeah, and at a certain point, you also have to just, you know. I'm not sure whether we can overcome every childhood pain or wounding, you know. Sometimes we also just have to live with parts of ourselves that are not as perfect in another way, but not as whole, maybe, as we would wish they were. Yeah.
How I guess I agree with you to a degree. And the reason I say that is because I remember what Barbara would talk about during her lectures, and she would say, in your deepest trauma or your deepest wound reside your gift. So when I look at it from that perspective, I change. I'm like, you know, as I go through this, then more of my essence or my gifts are able to emerge, and I can be
Yeah,
there
I
for
agree.
myself and I can
Yeah.
be there for others.
Yeah, so the trauma has definitely a purpose. You know, it's not there to cause you pain. I mean, it did. But on a soul level, the trauma is there to birth your gifts. Yeah.
And it's also a way for us to understand that we have these tools and resources to overcome any challenges, you know. And when we're faced with these different events later in life or as adults, once we start to transform all of these early woundings, then we know that we have the resources or the tools to overcome
Yeah.
any
Yeah.
future traumas. Or
Yeah, I
future
do
events.
agree. But when it comes to my physical body, I'm really not sure. You know, I do feel the difference, but I'm really not sure if I can become the relaxed person that I long to be. That there's always this feeling inside that I have to do something. And even now when I am becoming better at, you know, nourishing myself or taking good care of myself, not letting myself be pushed by the outside world or yeah, setting up high standards for myself. Yeah, I hope I can. I hope I can relax.
I
Yes, I
hope.
know. I
What
know.
happened to your
I know.
intention?
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, this year, this past year, I've really transcended something. I definitely can feel myself to be another person than I've been the rest of my life. So there's an effortlessness that I didn't know before. Yeah, so there, that has changed. Yeah. 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 So I feel, you know, before when I was younger, I felt often depressed or not happy with myself, basically, or feeling pushed forward, pressured into doing things. And now I think I've let go of those kind of things. But on a cellular level, I can still feel the tension. Yeah. So the body is also like the deepest place in where we have to let go. You know, the energy field transforms more quickly than the body itself. But when the energy field with all the emotions and all the beliefs, when that changes, it has an effect on the body and it starts to regenerate also the cells, the cell structure. And I really do. Yeah, and it rewires the brain also. Yeah.
Rewires the brain.
So I really can feel that, and I really believe that too. But the body is slower. Yeah.
Well, yeah. That makes sense because of what you went through in the womb.
So that would be my longing. Yeah.
So there's a part of you that, yeah. So there's a part of your body that still doesn't trust. And that's probably beyond the rational.
Yeah, on a rational level, I'm, you know, I've experienced enough to know that I will be fine. In the end, I will also be better than before. You know, when patterns repeat or when you come into a difficult situation again, then I have a lot of confidence that this time I will be even better afterwards and stronger and have a maybe a bigger energy field.
Well, I think if I look back, if I were to like do a quick evaluation or assessment, I'd say that your body, your cells also know that you are very strong because you were able to overcome this pill that your mom had to take.
Yeah.
You became stronger, maybe not complete.
Yeah. I've always felt that, you know, that if you can overcome that in the womb, like this attack, then you have really this desire to live. You really want to come. You really want to be here. And there's nothing that's going to stop me, because there's another funny part to this story also, that my mother became pregnant at a moment in her cycle where it was maybe impossible, you know, where they say at the end of the month, not during her fertile period or the fertile days, but at the last day maybe of the cycle. So then she became pregnant. So I always think, and my mother also, that she, you know, she really made it happen. She really wanted to this child, and I really wanted to be here. And I came, so... Yeah. So my mother also knew how to, you know, to with this mental projection and intention of seeing herself pregnant and really feeling the longing, she made it happen. Even outside the fertile days. Yeah.
And then if you look at your own relationship when you decided
Yeah, so I didn't want to, so I wished I, and then I wished for of course for a
to
child. Or when I was thinking about the father, I always had my intention on a father for my kid, but I forgot the intention to have a husband for myself. So my girl has this great father, but we divorced. We got separated a few years ago. So, but she has a great father. And then, but also when I gave birth to her, it was also a traumatic experience again. So what my mother went through in giving birth to me, I went through in giving birth to my girl. My sister also went through the same kind of process. We all weren't able to let go of the placenta, so it we had to be, or I had to be operated, and that was also very traumatic. So, the cycles repeat and give us a chance to heal on a deeper level. Yeah. So, what comes up for you?
Well, a lot of stuff that you said
Yeah.
is similar to, we have similar woundings and traumas, not exactly the same, but how they were formed and when they were formed are similar. And I was thinking about some of the things that you said and how we've, when we do couples therapy or when people are in conflict, how we look at the imago, okay, how we choose our partners. And it's usually based on something that we went
Yeah.
through or didn't get from our parents. Okay, so for me, I married a woman who was very like my mom in so many different ways that it took me a long time to really get that. It actually took me doing the imago work, that type of work, to say, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? Well, my mom was a very manipulative person. She was probably undiagnosed borderline. And then I married someone who was diagnosed with borderline. But I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know what that meant, is what I'm saying. I was very familiar with bipolar disorder or depression or any other of those disorders, but personality disorders were beyond me at that time. It wasn't until I went into grad school that I started understanding what personality disorders are and the different traits that come up: drama, manipulation, gaslighting, addiction, self-harm, all of these things. And that those things were in my wife at the time. It was like, oh. And just like with my mom, I was my mom's protector. So I overlooked a lot of the things that she did or said. The same thing in my marriage. It's like, oh, I can't let anybody know that she does these things, so I'm going to protect, and neglect myself. So with my mom, I neglected myself, my needs, anything she needed. She needed money, I would get it, and somehow deal with that. Same thing in my marriage. It's like something comes up, her needs are more important than my needs. If I'm sad about something, I'm not allowed to express that. So I'm looking at how we create these relationships and what we're actually looking for or looking to heal. And we're repeating these behaviors until we recognize it and stop the pattern, decide to stop the pattern.
And so rewarding also, because as soon as we are able to stop it, we don't have to pass it through to our children anymore. So they can live a freer or more connected life than we did. Yeah. So the healing works to the people before us, to our parents and great grandparents and everything, and to our children and grandchildren. Yeah. Yeah.
Seven generations back and seven generations forward is what they say. But, you know, we're talking about relationships. I also consider business a relationship of sorts, how we can get stuck in a job and act out the same things, the same woundings or traumas that we did when we were kids. We stay someplace and take the abuse from our employers or our coworkers.
Yeah, sure. Families. That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think this is a good time to stop. And I think we could continue this discussion in another episode. So definitely a part two, because as we're speaking and sharing, obviously for me, I'm becoming more grounded and centered and feeling more comfortable sharing, because I think this is important. This is important information.
And I can really feel how my nervous system is triggered. Like, it's really, you know, I'm getting nervous now. But it's, I like it also because it's good to share. You know, it's so important to share. And I think, you know, the time of people sharing from books is like over. We really have to share from inside ourselves and show ourselves. Yeah.
I agree. And I hesitate to say that. And I agree. I do agree. The books, maybe people have time to read. I still read. So the impact of listening to someone's voice and their story.
It transmits the energy. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, it does. It does, for sure. So maybe next time we'll have a guest.
Cool.
We won't be on the spot so much.
I'll ask a lot of questions. No, thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I really like it when you do.
Okay. Yeah,
that's great.
Thank you. Let's, you know, I will share this last piece. In my household, another trauma was we keep everything inside. You don't air your dirty laundry. You don't put your business out on the streets. So, and I know that for a lot of Black families or minority families, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You never go to a therapist because that's a sign of weakness. And so you keep it in. It was so bad for me that when I was 16 years old, I almost died of two bleeding stomach ulcers because I took on all of the burdens of my family. And that was a trying time. Lots of shit going on, but you know, those are some of the ways that, we can hurt ourselves by not speaking.
Yeah, so that's really important too, that by taking up or on the pain of others, you can really get ill yourself. So you have to find a way to keep the energy moving. Express it, go inside, see a therapist. Healings,
get some energy healings.
Yeah.
Hit the heavy bag, do martial arts, yoga, mindfulness, the list goes on and on, and we have more opportunity now that we
But make your energy flow. Internet. Don't get let it get stuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah.
Because it creates disease.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing. Looking forward to next week.
So after we get off, I'll probably, there's a saying in the movie Friday, yeah, you're going to go cry in the car. So I'll probably get and scream, what the hell did I just say?
Yeah, I'm relatively safe here in the Netherlands. Nobody can spell my name anyway.
Yeah.
That's true. I know. I saw it.
Wait, hold up.
No, that's okay.
I apologize. I'm sorry. No. So anyway, again, pleasure.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
See you next week.